This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I said glorious Clearwater, Florida. I think Ed in the control room was smiling a little bit because right now we are in the middle of a major storm, but generally speaking, Clearwater is always wonderful weather, and even if it's raining, you can always be inside your hotel room here and enjoy a good book. So I am so honored, really, today that I have a guest who has made a difference in the lives of so many writers, and so I am so happy that I am able to welcome her to Joy on Paper today on the release date of her first book. Julie Maloney is, well, I'm just going to introduce her, and we're going to talk about all of the wonderful things she has done. She is the founder of Women Reading Aloud, which is a wonderful program for writers. But today we talk about the release date of her very first book. So I am so excited to welcome Julie to the program. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Patsy. Thanks so much for having me here.
Well, it's always exciting to be talking to an author on their release date. And a matter of chance it is hard for me to believe that, it's your first book, because you have been in the writer's world for so many years. I think for 15 years, you have been promoting writers. And it's hard to believe that this is your first book.
Yeah. Well, this is my first novel. I've written poetry, and I have a book of poetry that came out a few years ago. And so I really have been a poet, so this is my debut novel, and you're right, I am so excited to be talking to you today on my release date.
It is, as I said, because everybody in the writing community knows all of the work that you've done with Women Reading Aloud, these wonderful events where women get together and just learn so much, and wow, you are, a first novel. This is so impressive. It was hard to believe it was a first novel because it is fantastic.
Oh, Patsy, thank you so much. I think you've just made my day.
Well, you know, I love poetry. And so when I was reading your book, I realized there is this element always. I think poets just learn a kind of discipline of words, and really understanding how to evoke a scene. And you do that in this book because it is a very moving book in so many ways. It's an emotional story, and an important story about a mother who believes. And that is sort of a fundamental element of humanity, that a mother who doesn't give up hope. So tell us about how you came about this story, and tell us what you want people to know about it.
Well, thank you again. I want the reader to have the experience of learning about what happens to the person left behind when tragedy strikes. What does that person do, and how does she overcome the obstacles and the challenges of just living day to day as she's living with this tragedy that is tucked deeply inside her heart. And Maddie Stewart is a character that slipped onto the page over 10 years ago. I was in a workshop and just responding to an exercise, and there Maddie Stewart appeared. And I just tucked her into the background of my brain and put her away for a while, and then the past 5 years, she just became too noisy. I had to absolutely put her on the page. I had to give her story a resolution, and she brought in many other characters as well. And I fell in love with Maddie Stewart. And again, I wanted to explore what happens to someone who is left. She's the one that is behind. And as much as the story is about the kidnapping of the child, the story truly focuses on the journey of Maddie Stewart, of the mother.
And the story is told so beautifully. Right from the very beginning, we are gripped with the loss of a 8-year-old child. And what it means to a mother, and how, with all of the people around her who are ready to say, forget it, it's over, and how a mother just can't do that.
Yes. And I think Maddie Stewart, she knows her daughter well. This is a precocious child. And she believed that she knew the people that she had left with Maddie, with her child on the beach. She doesn't believe that these are bad people. And for some reason, she holds on to hope. And along the journey, the book is written over the course of 5 years, and it tells the story of Maddie Stewart, how she transforms herself over the course of 5 years. And I only say that I couldn't have just had this book be traveling over 1 year. It had to move over 5 years, because in order to change, she needed more time. But what I want the reader to see is that Maddie has a little hard edges to her. And then as the book moves along, she softens. She softens as she actually, even though she's dealing with such incredible tragedy, she does find compassion.
Well, the beautiful thing about this book is that there are these depths to it. To the depths to Maddie's character and to the other story storyline. Now, when you're writing about Maddie, and we, of course, you bring in this element of art, which I really enjoy. So tell us about this. I thought this was great.
Oh, thanks so much. Well, this again was actually a matter of chance. I was at the Morgan Library in New York City, and I was browsing the exhibits, and I came across this beautiful drawing by the artist Katja Kollwitz. And Kollwitz is actually Germany's most revered artist, and there are two museums dedicated to Kollwitz, one in Cologne and one in Berlin, Germany. And I decided, when I saw this drawing, and it was of a grieving mother, and that Kollwitz really did devote her life to being an advocate for the forlorn, for the poverty-stricken, for those left behind. And I said, I have to go to Germany. I have to go see the work by this artist. So I did. I went to Cologne, Germany, and the museum is dedicated solely to Kollwitz. And I have to tell you, Patsy, when I walked in to that museum, I cried. I had such an emotional experience, because I thought, here I am surrounded by this incredible work, by this incredible art. And so I wanted somehow to, as I advanced Maddie Stewart, as I advanced her transformation as an artist, to being a recognized artist, as she was painting her way through grief, I was using Kollwitz as my personal muse. I mean, sometimes I would actually sit at my desk and I would just turn page after page of looking at her art when I returned home. And I have the most beautiful books of her art. And I would just look there and see if they could flip inside me so I could find the right words to express what Maddie Stewart, how she was transforming herself into being an artist.
Well, Kollwitz definitely captures that feeling of pain, of agony,
yes,
of loss. And as I've been to Germany and to Berlin, you know, once you've seen her work, you say, wow, it does make a permanent impression on your mind.
You're right. I mean, Kollwitz suffered great personal tragedy. She lost her son, Peter, and her grandson, also named Peter, in the war. But she really lived with immense tragedy, but it didn't stop her from painting.
Now, one of the things that I like about the book, beside the basic story, is that there are, as I said, there's depths, and we're not sure. You managed to really make it suspenseful, because you know, we're hoping, of course, for something good happening, but we're also finding layers of all sorts of other things going on in this situation that were really unexpected.
Yeah, well, Maddie has to make, there are moral choices that she has to make. And, for instance, and I don't want to give any spoilers here, but when she does just happen to stumble upon something else that is heinous, that she sees, and she has to make the choice when she sees other children perhaps being at risk. Should she go in and involve herself with helping another child, even if it may jeopardize saving her own? And this is a really difficult choice for her to make, because, of course, she wants her own back, her own child, to be returned. But when she sees something happening to another child, and she's sure that she's discovered something wrong, and then she's warned by the Russian mafia to stay away from their business, or else she will really get herself into further trouble. For a while, she can restrain herself, but then, you know, the heart is an intricate muscle, and when she begins to listen to her heart, she says, I have to make a choice, and it's difficult. So you're right. There are other themes that are going all along, even the theme of betrayal, when Maddie's best friend, Kay, does betray her. And this is another thing. Does she forgive Kay because she needs Kay's help in finding her daughter? Well, that, she has to go through all of these choices.
That's why I say this is such a very rich book, because there are so many nuances to it. It's not a simple, you know, book that we pick up and it's kidnapping and we're going to have a resolution, you know, 250 pages later or something. You really make us care so much about Maddie. I can see why you fell in love with her and why we want to know her and we want to go on this 5-year journey with her.
Thank you so much for saying that. And I want the reader to come away thinking about the story. I want the reader to think, you know, what if I were in that position? Would I be someone who would try to find a way to handle my grief? And again, even the first year, though, you know, Maddie has a hard time, a very difficult time. She can barely get out of bed. But what she does do is she walks the city. She walks to New York City. So New York City, I believe, is as much a character as all the people in the story.
Well, you know, I think it's a lovely story for writers to hear you talk about how Maddie came into your head 5 years ago, and you worked through it. You worked it. You sort of let it all bubble up in there in your brain and added bits and pieces as you went along. So you didn't force yourself. You didn't just say, okay, I have a story idea for kidnapping. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write it. You nurtured it.
Yes. And actually I always, and you're right about this. I'm really glad to hear you say this, because more than the story of abduction, it really is that story of Maddie Stewart. It really is the story of this transformation of this woman over 5 years. And when I was writing it, I did not have an outline. I'm not the kind of writer who outlines. I'm thinking about it, of course, but a writer has to get out of her head for sure. So when I would sit down every day and either write by hand or go to the computer, many times I wrote different scenes at the New York City Public Library in the Rose Reading Room, which is my most favorite place in New York City. And I would move to the page and every once in a while look up and see what I was looking at and then return down back to the page. So I would not know exactly where I was going. And I think most writers really don't know where they're going. They just have to trust that they'll get there.
Because when you are working, when you know your character, that character does take you on a journey.
You're right. You're right. The character's choices, they may not be Julie Maloney's choice, but it's the character's choice. And that's what the reader has to distinguish. It's not necessarily the author's choice. It's the choice the characters make, all the different characters. And sometimes, for instance, an early reader of a Matter of Chance has said to me, oh, when this was happening, I was thinking, don't go down there, don't get involved. But that's the choice the character makes. Even when the reader is concerned about that choice, the character has to just do what works for her.
Well, I feel like I'm one of that type of reader. When I'm saying to the character, don't do that, don't do that. But it's funny. And so that means that the author has done their job. They have really taken us to that level where we are outside of ourselves and we are inside the story. And that is always so exciting. And that's what I call the joy on paper. That for anybody who's not written, you can't quite understand the joy of putting the words down on paper. And how, even if they're not great words when you start, that just that joy of getting it down on paper. And I encourage people, I mean, I love to encourage people to write books. I think there's a book in everybody. So even if it's just a memoir, a story about your grandparents, whatever, just to feel that joy of seeing your words on paper, that's pretty exciting, isn't it?
It is, and I think it's, I agree with you, everybody can write something, everybody, if they move to the page, and not to be concerned about whether they're publishing or not, and it's also about hushing that inner critic. It's moving to the page and discovering language and discovering the authenticity of your own voice. That's a very exciting thing. That is definitely what you're calling joy on paper. It's absolutely correct.
And certainly, as a poet, you know that joy, because I think of poets have such a wonderful relationship with words and being able to visualize them both on the paper and in the mind and to understand what it's going to sound like when it's read aloud.
Yes. They're really, when you're reading aloud, something different happens. There's this extra dimension and you feel your throat open up. And I always say to writers who are in my workshops and retreats, you know, read aloud, but read from the lowest part of your belly. You know, really open yourself up and let there be oxygen and enjoy that freedom of being heard. That's something, that's an enormous gift of being heard without distraction.
Well, it must be exciting to have your first novel. I mean, it's always a big moment in your life.
It is. I am so grateful to all the support that A Matter of Chance has been getting. I mean, it's such a delicious moment for me. You're absolutely right. And I've written a sequel to this, so that book I'm editing now, so I'm excited about the fact that this storyline will keep on going.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, because I had a feeling. I had a feeling that it wouldn't take 5 years to get the next book, because once it's so, sometimes it's, that first one is like giving birth to a really big baby. You know?
You're right.
You did it once. You say, "What the heck? I can do it again," right?
Yeah. You know, you're so right. I writing this novel was a personal challenge for me. It was something I really wanted to do, and then the second one is actually written in the voice of a secondary character of A Matter of Chance, in the voice of Tuba Schwimmer and her daughter, Gita. And that, as I said, I'm doing a lot of editing on that book, but the bones are on the page, so I'm excited about that. And then, of course, there's a third one, because we have to find out what happens. We have to find out what happens.
Yes. Well, once you unleash that joy, you can't control it, right?
Right. And you know what? We shouldn't control it.
Exactly.
You know, you're so right. That joy on paper, we have to keep it going, because it's deeply satisfying. And I see writers in my workshops and retreats. I just see them have a glow about them once they, what I say, get hooked on writing.
Well, now, of course, in your case, there is that extra element. I know that, you know, you come out with your first novel, but because you are so well known in the writing world, I can see that it might have been a little extra pressure on you that, gee, I've been in this business for a long time. I better have a really good book coming out.
You know what? Actually, no. I think I tried to push that aside. I mean, that's all part of crushing the inner critic, and which is very difficult for us to do. All of us, no matter who we are, no matter how many books we've written, we all have that inner critic inside of us. And what I, you know, in the acknowledgments of this book, one of the first things I say is I thank all the people who didn't ask me why it was taking me so long. And because I had to just let this process happen, and I kept thinking when it's the right time, it's going to come. And today on my pub date, it really is the right time. It's all come together.
Well, I think you've done a wonderful job with this book. I'm going to have you on the next release date and the next release date after that, because I think you're just fantastic. It's funny, in your bio, I was so happy when JKS sent me, and they sent me this notice that, you know, that you came out with a book. And to myself, I said, it's her first book? I you know, like, what she been doing? But it was so funny. So, because Women Reading Aloud is just so well known. Your workshops are so well known. And it says in your bio, former dancer. And I thought,
yes.
It's sort of like saying former Marine. There's no such thing as a former Marine. You're a Marine. And I was thinking, you have to put in your bio, a dancer. You are always, yes. I mean, I'm sure that you just get out there and dance every day of your life. So.
You're right. What I say now, because you're right, I was a former dancer and choreographer, and I had my own company in New York City for many years. And I say now I'm dancing in the kitchen, which still gives me great joy. Today I've been saying to everyone, because of the release date, please get up and dance with me, because I'm dancing. And you're right. You're right. I love to move. I'm an active person. And I feel very fortunate that I started out as a dancer and then was able to transition it with my creative life into being a writer.
Now, when you started Women Reading Aloud, and I want to tell people that, first they can go to womenreadingaloud.org. It's your website for that organization, which is a nonprofit that you started. Did you initially start it just to read poetry, or did you plan to do all types of books?
No, it was actually, it was not limited to one genre. It was not for poets only. It was for every kind of writer. And I started this 15 years ago with inviting 12 women and to come to my home and sit around my dining room table and to read their work aloud. And then we would comment on what was working in the piece. And I had no idea that it would grow into an international organization where now I have worked with thousands of women writers from all different countries and also including Australia, and that I would be leading these international retreats. That was, again, it was something that continued to happen, continued to grow. And what I say is I operate from the premise of saying yes rather than saying no.
Well, I think it's amazing work, and if people have to, if they go to your website there, they'll see that the weekend retreat for April is sold out. That's the one in New Jersey, is it?
Yes, you're right.
And
yes.
And the Greece one is sold out, I think, almost, right?
Yeah.
You're going to have to hold more of these things. Anyway, they sound like a lot of fun, and people can go to that website and see more about that organization. And you also have a website, which is, right?
Yes, juliemaloney.net.
.net. Okay, juliemaloney.net. And
yes.
So they should go there. And the book is A Matter of Chance. And it's really a wonderful, wonderful read. And it has so many there are important themes in the book, and the most important, of course, is this mother and child bond that is so strong and so important. And so everyone, I think, will really enjoy the book from many different aspects, the intrigue and the suspense and just the beautiful writing. because
thank you.
A poet has a way with words, that's for sure. So you, and you certainly do. And it's a wonderful book, and they can find it wherever books are sold. It's called A Matter of Chance, and it's by Julie Maloney. And Julie, they can also go to your website, and you have some reading information there for them?
Yes, I have. Yes. If they go to my website at juliemaloney.net, there's a reader's guide that just went up. So those people who are in book clubs, and if they just go to, they can download the reader's guide on my website. And those are, reader's guide are discussion questions for their book clubs. And I'm open to going to book clubs. I love to talk to readers. And so that's the open, available. There's no charge for the reader's guide. They just go to the website and can download it.
Okay. And are you going on tour?
I'm going on tour, yes. I'm excited about that. There's also on the website a calendar of events where I will be. And I'm actually going to be going to Florida, to your neck of the woods, I think, in November.
Okay.
So I'm looking forward to that. But people can go on the website, and I also have a publicist that's on the website, and if they wish to bring me in for any kind of event, I love to meet readers.
Okay. Well, we will keep in touch because you're going to be back. And I yes. knew it. I knew it. The minute I finished this book, I said, she's working on one already. She's working on
one. I love it.
Okay. Well, Julie Maloney, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper. You have certainly found the joy, and it's always fun for me to talk to an author on the release date. So it was just fun for me. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Patsy.
Okay. Bye-bye now. We're going to do a quick commercial, then we'll be right back.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry My Pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
My Pillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I. Or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back to Joy on Paper. I'm just waiting now. Is KJ on? Hi. Okay. Well, I am so happy to welcome to the program today KJ Howe, international thriller author, because your book is fantastic. I love this
Thank
book.
Thank you.
It's called Skyjack, and we're going to talk about that. And it's so funny that the interview just before you, I was talking to Julie Maloney, who wrote a book called A Matter of Chance, which is about a child, an 8-year-old child who is kidnapped. And it's a story about the mother's search for this child. So it's so, and when I booked this, I didn't know, you know, both the connection that this was going to be a sort of a theme day, exactly.
So I love it.
It is. And it's what is absolutely fantastic about this book. Well, it's exciting. That's for sure. But I was so impressed, of course, with Lee Child's wonderful, wonderful recommendation of your writing in general.
Yes.
He was on the program not long ago, and he loves you, which is, it's nice to be loved by Lee Child, isn't it?
It's a real honor. He's a great, I actually studied with Lee writing in the Bahamas.
What?
Of all the dream spots to study, right? And the dream teachers. And he was incredibly helpful. He's a very, very smart, charismatic guy, and I have the deepest respect for his writing.
Well, he is wonderful. I love him, and I think that, now we're going to talk about this book, which, by the way, I love this cover. Isn't it a fantastic cover?
I love bright colors, so 110%. I was thrilled, and the image is very provocative, right?
Oh, it is, and it really sets the tone for the book. So let's talk a little bit about what you do, because one of the things that I have always been interested, well, not always, but in the past 5 or 6 years, I have been deeply involved with people who have been captured, and who were in solitary confinement in many cases, because I work with the F-105 pilots to tell the story about their capture in Vietnam during the Vietnam War, and they spent so many of them spent years and years in captivity, and so this entire idea of what happens to somebody when in your case, you're talking about kidnapping. They were shot down, but being in isolation, being held captive, it's a theme in your stories. And wow, you really capture that feeling.
Well, thank you. For the last 5 years, I researched kidnap and ransom intensely because I was really passionate about the subject matter and wanted to make sure I got it right. Bring an authenticity to the page. And I've had the opportunity to speak with former hostages and to, especially Peter Moore, who was the longest held hostage in Iraq for almost 1,000 days. And Peter, really explained to me, how you battle against the boredom, the intense boredom, the terrible food, the waking up every day not knowing if this will be the day you're rescued or released or the day you'll be executed. There's so many factors. And one of the things that really stood out to me that he mentioned is the fact that you have to keep your mind active and, maybe build a house in your mind with each room specifically detailed, so that you can keep that focus going. And Peter himself was chained to a radiator, and there was cracks on the wall beside him. So what he did was he built an entire train system in his mind using the cracks.
Well, this is why he survived, because it is it is so difficult. And one of the guests on my program was Colonel Leo Thorsness, who was captured and at the Hanoi Hilton for 2,135 days. And a good part of that was in isolation, because he was a real somebody that the enemy wanted to break, and so they really tortured him also. And it's so important that somebody who is captured has some resilience and some understanding of what the process is. And you, I mean, I think it's fantastic that, well, first of all, one never thinks of a kidnap and ransom industry, but there is a kidnap and ransom industry, and they even have conventions, which I found very funny.
Yeah, it's quite something, really. I mean, when I decided to, study kidnapping, I did look, did all my homework, read everything I could get my hands on about it. And then I did Google, Kidnap and Ransom Conference, and that's how I ended up meeting a great deal of these people. And they've been wonderfully open and kind to tell me about their lives and their world. And you're right, it's amazing, really, the human resilience. And that's
Our natural instinct, you know, when we're under stress, is to fight, flight, or freeze. That's just biologically we're programmed to do so. And we need to war against all those natural inclinations when we're kidnapped. And what we need to do instead is just to endure, you know, endure the boredom, endure the hardship, and maintain hope. That's really difficult to do day after day when we're talking about these long-term captivities.
Now, of course, your character, Thea Paris, is, well, what are we calling her now? Because everybody wants to now be a freedom broker. A freedom broker. After your first book, where you call, what are they normally called?
Well, they're a response consultant. Response consultant. Yeah, well, but that didn't have the right ring for
It doesn't have any panache. No.
So I kind of coined the term freedom broker, and it's really sweet how some of them are, you know, just adopting it and saying, "Yeah, I'm a freedom broker," and it really captures what they do.
Well, isn't that nice? That's a mark of a really great writer that you capture. You are capturing people now, so that's wonderful.
Thank you.
Now let's talk about Thea, because she's a fascinating character. You know, one of the things is when you come out with a character who's going to run, and I think right from the beginning you understood that this is going to be a series, because you know, when you find a character like this, you're going to keep going with her. It's sort of like when Lee Child found Jack Reacher, that's it. You're going to run with that as long as you can, because, and so that's why having a character like Thea, who is multidimensional, really gives you a lot of space to work with.
Yeah, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. I wanted to do a very strong female protagonist. You know, the world has a lot of Jason Bournes and James Bonds and people like that, and I really felt it was nice to have a little bit of girl power. But I wanted to make sure that, you know, she wasn't like a, you know, kind of a comic book character. And like you said, I wanted to give her a rich family background. She comes from a very dysfunctional family. I wanted, you know, to also give her an illness. She has type 1 diabetes. My grandfather had type 1, and wanted to honor him by doing that. And also really wanted to show, you know, that just because someone has, you know, a chronic illness, it does not really have to stop them from pursuing their dreams or, you know, living their like careers that they would like to. These days, Olympians, musicians, actors, you know, Supreme Court justices, I mean, they all have type 1 diabetes and do really, really well. So I thought it was really important. And, you know, I really wanted to fully flesh her out, and hopefully in each book you'll get to know Thea even a little bit better.
And also, by giving her type 1 diabetes, you make us all nail biters, because we're like, we're reading and we're, oh no. So I think of, you know, any disease you might have thought of giving her, that one is one that people really understand the time element. So we get really
True.
Nervous. I mean, really nervous. Okay. She's got to eat. So
yes, exactly.
You know, and
well,
it's funny.
For a thriller, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you take us so much into the character, which is part of the fun of the books, that we really are right there with her, and we want to make sure she's okay while she solves all the other problems going on around her.
Yeah, and you know, I was very honored that the American Diabetes Association, you know, felt it was an authentic portrayal of diabetes. I'm a former medical writer, and so I've written a great deal about diabetes, and I just really like feel that there's 371 million people out there with diabetes, not just including type 1 and 2. And, you know, it's there's a lot of myths, you know, that are out there about the illness, and it's really nice to try and bust those myths and share with people what it's like for people, you know, to live with diabetes. And, you know, when you talk about thrillers, you always want to build in these inherent ticking time clocks, right? That's what really makes thrillers exciting. And as you mentioned, you know, diabetes offers that, because if Thea doesn't get her elixir, insulin, then she's in serious trouble.
And you're constantly worried about her. You're constantly worried.
You're very caring. Thank you.
And you think, oh, she can't get kidnapped, because that's... So you're always there, going right along with her. You're sort of like, you want to have your hand on her back and make sure she's okay. But she's very clever, and boy, is she strong. You know, they're talking now, which is ridiculous, of doing James Bond, but calling her Jamie Bond. You know, get real people. Why do they need to take James Bond when they have Thea Paris? Forget James Bond. We don't need we have Thea Paris, you know. They don't have to go back and do the same thing. This is why, you know, sometimes you get so irritated with Hollywood because they can't think outside of the box. Because I don't know if you're writing these stories with the idea that, yes, they are going to make wonderful movies, because they are going to make a wonderful movie, right?
Well, I hope so. That would be wonderful news, that's for sure. But, I mean, I think very cinematically. You know, when I write, I tend to watch sort of in my mind a screen in front of me and something happening and then try and capture it. And then also I jump from that kind of to behind my head, you know, just to be in the character's mind and think and feel what they feel. But, yeah, I mean, I think the international locales would be fun, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And now I've been to many of the international locales that you write about. So tell us the background of why you know so much about international intrigue.
Sure, I'd be delighted to. Growing up, my father worked in telecommunications, so we moved around quite a bit. And I lived in Africa, Saudi Arabia, Puerto Rico, Europe, you know, all over. So I was born in Toronto, Canada, but I'm a bit of a child of the world. So I felt very comfortable in these foreign environments, and I really wanted to capture that. And I love the fact that Thea has the type of job where she can travel to many different settings. First, there's an enormous number of type of kidnappings that I'm going to explore in each and every book, you know. That will be fun to tackle each and every one in different ways. And then in addition to that, I think it's really exciting to be able to, you know, showcase things in different settings in the world. And if you go to my website, kjhow.com, I have a map up there and it shows the hot spots of kidnapping. So before you're planning that next vacation, you might want to take a look.
Exactly. Boy, it's a little bit scary. You know, until I read your books, I didn't realize. I mean, you know that there are kidnappings going on, but that's 40,000 a year that are reported, and certainly a lot more that aren't reported. So, you know, it is a big industry out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because back in the day, it used to be kind of a smaller scale where high net worth individuals and, you know, executives overseas were at risk. Nowadays, missionaries, journalists, aid workers, you know, you name it, adventurers, all are at high risk of kidnapping in certain regions. And, you know, it's a result of, you know, terrorists trying to use kidnapping as fundraising mechanism because some of their oil money has dried up. And there's, you know, an endless commodity of what they feel, you know, of humans, right, that they can trade for money. And then also in developing countries, the displaced military and police, they don't have jobs. They can't put food on the table for their families. But they have great security skills. So they've turned to kidnapping as a way of making a living. So this is sad.
It is. And as you said, it is a good idea to look at those, at the map on your website, which is kjhow.com, because I would seriously think about, you know, where you're going to go and vacation, because some of these places are so dangerous, and I mm-hmm. places that maybe one time that we thought we could go easily, I wouldn't go into today. And for years I traveled around Europe, and I traveled in the Middle East, and there are places that I wouldn't go today.
Yeah, I hear you. Things have changed dramatically, and they continue to evolve. And one of the best things you can do before you travel anywhere is to look up the travel advisory. You know, for wherever country you live in, there'll be travel advisories for different locales. And check those out to see what's happening in the region. You can get up-to-date security information, which will be very, very helpful to you. And I do a lot of talks on travel safety because of what I've learned, and I thoroughly enjoy sharing the information with people, because at the end of the day, you know, you can prevent your kidnapping. That is the best course of action, right? By being a savvy traveler and having situational awareness when you're on, you know, on the road and in difficult places. Because kidnappers, you know, think about them. They're criminals, and most criminals take the easiest route possible. So if you look like an easy mark, you know, you will be a lot more tantalizing to them than if you are a hard target. And so, you know, whenever you can, travel in groups, you know. One of the things I tend to tell people is if you're in a dicey region, don't hire a taxi, just jump in a taxi. Instead, ask your hotel to book you a car with a trusted driver. And it might cost slightly more, but your health and safety is worth every penny.
And to let somebody know where you are at all times.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly.
Yeah, you have to do these things. And as I said, I'm having myself lived in some of these locations. I know that the situational awareness is so, so important. Now, you mentioned that you study with Lee Child. And actually, you've studied with some other people, too. And how did, you know, this show, I have so many people who are writing, they're in the process of writing, and they're trying to get to be better writers. So how did you get involved in this whole procedure of taking work? You've done workshops, right?
Sure. Yeah. So, well, like I said, I was a medical writer, and I knew in my heart that I definitely wanted to tell stories. I had so many ideas and constantly, and I was just always, you know, kind of writing them down. So I decided to go back and do my master's in creative writing. So I went to Seton Hill University and did that. But I also felt that getting advice from the experts, the masters in the genre, was a smart move because, you know, they've learned through their own mistakes to become better writers. And I'm a bit of a craft junkie. You know, I love learning, like, all the little nuts and bolts about writing good craft. And as a medical writer, you're very technical, you're very journalistic, but when you're creating a story, you have to kind of evoke an image. It's like a movie in someone's mind, you know, and you have to write with a very, very different dramatic flair. So I wanted to study that. I had the opportunity to, and you'll laugh because you can tell I like warm places. I studied with Steve Barry, who was just a terrific teacher, and it was in Hawaii. And then I had the opportunity to study with Lee in the Bahamas. And I've also been very, very, very lucky to have a wonderful mentor in David Morrell, creator of Rambo, who is, you know, amazing professor, teacher. And he really pushed me to dig deep into character. And I'm very grateful for that. So I think really I would say to people, and mind you, I started out taking local courses at my university that's nearby. So I would just say to people, reach out, figure out, you know, what you can do. Instead of taking vacations, I used to do writing retreats so that I could focus all my energy on trying to become a better writer. So that's just, you know, a snapshot. There's local library courses you can take. There's endless opportunities to learn, and I highly recommend it.
Now, of course, people should go to your website, which is kjhow.com, and there is lots of wonderful information there. And, of course, featured are some of the beautiful, beautiful comments from all of the people who have said wonderful things about you, including many, many of them who have been on my program, Nelson DeMille. I love Nelson DeMille.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, Clive Cussler has been on Joy on Paper, and he says, "Unparalleled Storytelling by K.J. Howe." Whoa, isn't that nice? And of course, Steve Barry is wonderful. And he says, "You're smart, detailed, and highly engaging." Well, you know, I think those kind of, if I were you, I'd just sit for a half an hour every day with my coffee and just look at those, look at those things on my website, because they are, say, also, and then there's Lisa Gardner. Of course, she's been on the program and she loves you. And I like Lee Child when he says razor sharp. So, you know, this is pretty good. KJ Howe, and the book is Skyjack, and it is called A Kidnap and Ransom Thriller, and it's available wherever books are sold. But I'm not letting you go yet, because KJ Howe, take off your hat. I don't know if you have
sure.
a hat, but take it off, and let me reintroduce you as Kimberly Howe, because you are also very important as Kimberly Howe, as the executive director of Thrill Fest. Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah, I keep myself busy. Out of trouble.
I was saying, this is one girl who, how did you were doing Thrill Fest before you wrote your two books here, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. I started volunteering actually at the very first Thrill Fest, and I fell in love with the organization. I was so impressed with people, how caring they are, how supportive, everyone mentoring each other. And so I just got more and more involved and ended up being asked to be the executive director, which I'm honored to be in the last 8 or 9 years. And It's been an incredible learning journey, and I highly recommend people come to Thriller Fest. And Thriller Fest is a week-long extravaganza, July 10 to 14 this year. It's based always in New York, at the Grand Hyatt in Manhattan. And this year we're going to be featuring, I think you might have heard of this gentleman, George R. R. Martin from Game of Thrones.
Uh-huh. I think so.
So he seems to have had a touch of success. So we're so excited about, you know, George coming to join us. And we're also going to be having James Rollins as our Silver Bullet and Megan Abbott as our spotlight guest. So, and we're going to have Lisa Gardner, Lee Child be there, Steve Barry, Dave Morrell, and a host of other, Heather Graham. It's a really lovely group of authors. And if you have some time to come up to New York for the event, I highly recommend it. If you're an aspiring author, there's tons you can learn from a craft perspective. And you can also pitch to over 60 agents at PitchFest. And we have cocktail parties every night. People seem to enjoy those.
Okay. Well, that's it. Everybody, you want to attend this. And one of the reasons you want to attend Thrill Fest 13, it's this year's 13th one, which is July 10th to the 14th at the Grand Hyatt in New York City, is that you will get to meet KJ Howe, right?
Are you kidding? I hope I'll be there, yes. I'm really excited, and I love welcoming new people. If anyone has questions, you go to thrillerfest.com, and my email is on there, so drop me a line anytime. I'm always happy to help, advise, you know, support in any way we can. The International Thriller Writers, the umbrella organization, is actually our whole mandate is to support other authors.
Well, it's a fantastic organization, and you do a beautiful job, and this, the second book in your Kidnap and Ransom thriller series with Thea Paris, who is a wonderful character, better than Jamie Bond. I don't want Jamie Bond. I want Thea Paris.
So you actually heard they're going to do this for
yeah,
sure?
That's what they're saying. I mean, can you believe it? I mean, it's ridiculous. I think it's ridiculous. You know, they don't need it. They've got you.
Wait, you're very kind. I mean, it does seem, I would love to see, you know, them welcome more fresh characters. Right?
Exactly.
There's people out there with fantastic imagination.
Exactly. We don't need it. We don't need a rehash. We need somebody new, fresh. Somebody like KJ Howe. Okay?
You're very kind.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, KJ. And perhaps.
It's an absolute pleasure.
Okay. It's absolutely wonderful talking to you. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay. Oh, she's delightful. Wow. Everybody, really. Think of this Thriller Fest in July. It is going to be great. If you go to the thrillerfest.org website and find out more about it. And meanwhile, as I tell everyone, if you want to be a writer, you have to write. And one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're lucky, to have them spoken on the big screen or even the little screen by wonderful actors. But the whole point is you have to start writing. So do it today. And then meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. And thank you, Ed, for everything. He's saluting me. I'm saluting him. And bye-bye for now.